Shalom Aleichem, I hope everything is well. This is Yosef Bronstein, re-recording a shiur that I had discussed to give to the Avreichem on Mechon Zimrat Ta'aretz. So on Mechon Zimrat Ta'aretz, we learn Gemara Halacha in the traditional sense in the morning. This year we're focusing on Hilchos Sugyos and Hilchos Tefillah. And then there is a limud of Machshava and Chasidos and Pnimiyos HaTorah in the afternoon. And it's all under the auspices of the heading of Torah's Eretz Yisrael. So I figured it would be good, both for me and maybe for some other people as well, to explore the meaning of this term, Torah's Eretz Yisrael, particularly in the Sukkah, to be able to find out, to be able to define it a little bit better, to be able to see what is Torah's Eretz Yisrael in the thought of Rav Kook, and maybe some other Gedolei Yisrael as well, and how is it distinctive by the time a continuation of Torah's Chutz Laretz. So in this shiur, what I would like to do very briefly is a hakdama to the concept of Torah's Eretz Yisrael, and then focus on one aspect of it. And Amirat Hashem, in future shiurim, we'll be focusing on the other aspects of Torah's Eretz Yisrael, maybe some even more fundamental ones than the one we'll be speaking about today. So as a brief hakdama, so generally speaking, when we think of Torah, we think of something that Hashem gave us many, many thousands of years ago at Sinai. We think of Torah Shavuksav, we think of Torah Shabbat Peh. We think of the Mishnah and the Gemara. We think of things that are in the past that we are still trying to explore and still trying to figure out their meaning. But there is a series of midrashim that describe a new gilui of the Torah that is going to exist in Yemos HaMashiach. The first source, there are just two makaros in Chazal for this, so there are many more. The midrashim of Yagaraba is describing the Shar HaBar and the Leviathan, these two one animal, one large fish, that are going to be shechted and then fed to the tzaddikim la'asulavo. So the Midrash says, Ketan hei nishkatan, how they shechted? V'emos nosin levyasan v'karna v'nochro levyasan nosin v'emos v'sampira v'karo. So basically, there's going to be a big fight between them, and they're going to slit each other's necks. V'atzaddikim omrim zushkita ksherehi. And the tzaddikim say that they split each other's necks, that it's a shkita ksherehi, we're allowed to eat it. But then the Midrash asks, "Vloklach tanina and a kol shalchtin, a v'kol shalchtin, the olam shalchtin, chutz m'mago katzir v'magira v'ashinayim atziporen neishin chokin." But this is not a kosher shkita according to our Mishnayos. Amar Rav Abba Bar Kahana, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Torah me'iti teitzei, chidush Torah me'iti teitzei. There is a chidush Torah that is going to emanate from a Kadosh Baruch Hu le'asilavo in Yemos Mashiach. So in this Midrash, there is a particularly, I guess you would say, sharp application of this idea of chidush Torah me'iti teitzei. That there is a halacha that is going to change. Again, to understand if this is literal or not literal, there is a long literature in the Achronim in particular about this. But what we can take out of this is that there is some concept of Chidush Torah Me'iti Teitzei, that in Yemos HaMashiach there is going to be some new giloy of the Torah. Similarly, Avos Rabbi Nasan has on the pasuk on Nistaros Hashem Malkino v'neglos lanu v'neino ad olam. So the Gemara Sanhedrin discusses this pasuk in terms of what types of aviros are we responsible for each other. What are the limits of arivos? Is it arvos? Is it just for niglos or also nistaros? Maybe when we enter Eretz Yisrael, then our arvos extends to nistaros as well. But the Avos Rabbi Nasan is one medrash, one makor chazal, which represents some other medrashim as well. They have an additional interpretation of the pasuk. Nistaros Hashem Malkino v'neglos lanu v'neino ad olam refers to two parts of the Torah. There is a niglos, there is the revealed parts of the Torah. Then there is the nistaros, the hidden parts of the Torah. And the Midrash says, you might think that the nistaros are going to remain in nistar forever. If you look at the last line, l'fi sheb'olam hazeh einan guluyin lanu, avo guluyin lanu la'aseh lavo. The nistaros Hashem Malkino, the nistar level of the Torah, that right now is nistar from us, la'asalavo, it is going to be revealed. So you have, and this is representative of a larger swath of Makaros and Chazal, that there is going to be some type of new gilui of the Torah, la'asalavo, either new halachos or something of that sort. Again, that's pretty radical, but we'll leave that on the side for now. Maybe we'll discuss that at a different time. Or just a nistar, a different level of interpretation of the Torah. Agav, because we're going to be talking a little bit about academic university methodologies of studying Torah, this Tosefta, Avos Rabbi Nasan, that Nistaros Hashem Malkeinu refers to a hidden element of the Torah, this also appears in the Dead Sea Scrolls, that they're Morat Tzedek, they wrote down in their books, they say that they're Morat Tzedek, their teacher, the head of the sect over there, he is teaching the people there, the Nistaros, the hidden meanings of the Torah, the Peshers, that only he is privy to through the Koach of Nevuah. So you see, this Perush and the Pasuk was floating around in the times of Bayit Sheni, and it is in Chazal, not in terms of no changing halachos or things of that sort, just in terms of a Nistar level of the Torah that is going to be revealed to us above. Again, you could say that these Midrashim They're messianic, they're for the loss of level, they don't have any practical ramification in terms of our learning of the Torah. So that is set of Makoros number one. A second set of Makoros describes the term or Torah of Eretz Israel. One of the most famous Makoros is Bereishis Rabbah Perek Tzayin, Vazahava Eretz Hei Tov, the gold of one of the lands that when the rivers that went out of Gan Eden surrounded was Tov. I'm forgetting exactly the identity of the land right now, I apologize. Malamid she'in Torah k'taras Eretz Israel, v'in chachma k'kochmas Eretz Israel. There's no Torah like the Torah of Eretz Israel, like the Torah of Eretz Israel. Frequently, Rav Kook's writings as well, this medrash is quoted together with a passage from the Zohar HaKadosh. Again, I don't know the Zohar well enough to know what is the Zohar HaKadosh versus the regular book of the Zohar. Maybe somebody could enlighten me afterwards. But there is a pasuk in Rus, ala geula v'ala timura, and the Zohar says, ala geula zu talmud yushalmi, ala timura ze talmud bavli. The geula, redemption, is a talmud yushalmi, and timura, the exchange, the imitation, the something which you get, but it's not the real McCoy, that is Talmud Bavli. So again, Talmud Yerushalmi is not necessarily Torah Eretz Israel, but it's going to be associated in this mindset. So you have the Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah that plays up the importance of Torah Eretz Israel in Torah Eretz Israel. You have the Zohar HaKadosh that talks about Al Geula that refers to Talmud Yerushalmi. And there's another makar in mainstream Chazal, Talmud Bavli, that seems to be, that is also sometimes associated with this, as we'll see. So Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Kaftalet, Mechashakakeme Hoshivani Kemisei Olam, that when Jews went from Eretz Yisrael into Galus Bavel, with the destruction of the first base of Mikdash, that we were led in darkness, like people that are passed away, Amar Virmia Zetamud Shel Bavli. So Zetamud Shel Bavli. So in some way, Talmud Bavli is darkness, is dark, with Kemisei Olam. Again, and not, obviously, this is in Talmud Bavli, and Talmud Bavli is our main source of halacha. And the Rif tells us we pass on passing like the Bavli of the Yerushalmi, for a variety of reasons. And the Bavli is our last major authoritative book for halacha until New Sanhedrin comes around. But in a certain sense, Zutumud Shabavli, Talmud Bavli has a darker element to it. It's extremely confusing. Lots of halachas, lots of pilpul, lots of argumentation. So you have this set of makoros about a new Torah, a new level of Torah, a new gilui of Torah, lasa lavo, and something about Torah's Eretz Yisrael as being the ideal form of Torah. So again, in many schools of thought, these midrashim will be taken in a very, very amorphous way, in a way that's relevant when Mashiach comes, not necessarily relevant now. Maybe there's a certain siyata d'shmaya in the learning of Torah that exists in Eretz Yisrael, which doesn't exist in Chutz Laaretz. But as we'll see, particularly in the thought of Rav Kook and in the thought of others as well, that these makoros take on a very specific meaning about the texture and nature and methodology and the curriculum of Torah as during our time period when Jews are coming back to Eretz Israel and the Geula process has started. And it's these midrashim are not just relegated to something that we'll discover their meaning when Mashiach comes. Perhaps a good introduction to the thought of Rav Kook on this matter is a piece in Ma'amarei HaRiya. That's a book of collected essays from Rav Kook. In the back, they have shorter statements from Rav Kook that you would think would appear in the regular books or wrote, and they're not long essays or shorter pieces, but they weren't published in other places, and Rav Lisha Avaner, when he published Ma'amarei HaRiya, he put them in there. So there is a piece that which at least for me, when I learned it, it made a lot of things in Rav Kook's thought click. It was a very fundamental piece in helping me understand what Rav Kook was trying to do in many other pieces. And Rav Kook writes as follows: In matriya haluumit lo tachadish lanu ha'arav tefila ha'arav Torah ha'arav darkei musar v'akshavat ha'emuna inena adayin tachia amitis. That if the national revival of Jews in Eretz Israel doesn't innovate something for us, doesn't bring us to a new light of Torah, of tefillah, a new light of Torah, a new light in the way we do Musar, in our moral behavior, and of Hakshava Semuna, or in our faith, in our Munos Fideos, or the way we think about our Munos Fideos, it is not yet a true Tchiyah. And therefore, because we know this is a true Tchiyah Lumit, because we know we are in the Aschal of the Gula, we are in a time of real national revival, therefore, the Tchiyah Lumit has to bring together with it a new Chidush in all of these areas. So you look at you think about this piece. It's a huge chiddush. I guess to use the term Rav Kook uses. Because if you'd ask maybe your average Gadol B'Yisrael, when Jews went to Eretz Israel, what halachos require innovation? Where is there going to be a chiddush? So you would say they could keep Trumas Maestros, maybe they'll keep Shemitah. No, they'll do all sorts of things that have to do with mitzvos atzilios ba'aretz. That is the chiddush. But should your davening change? Should your learning change? Should your muster change? Should your amunah change? These things seem to be constant all throughout history. Why would your Torah change? Why would your muster change? Why would your amunah change? Just because you are back in Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Kook, in this piece and in many, many other pieces, clearly viewed things a little bit differently. His understanding was, now we're not going to have a radical shift. Now that we're back in Eretz Yisrael, halakha is going to be X, Y, and Z, and Judaism is going to be X, Y, and Z. But there are definitely different textures to Judaism, to Yahdus, our relationship with Hashem at different time periods. And the fact that Jews are now returning back to Eretz Yisrael is ushering in a new time period, a time period of Haskalat HaZegula, a time period where we have to be looking forward more than ever towards the ultimate redemption. And therefore, that requires of us to not radically shift our davening. We're still saying this, still saying the same Shemot Esrei, but some type of new Ha'aron of davening. The texture of our tefillah has to be different. And the texture of our interpersonal relationship has to be different. What muster means, what emunah means. All of these things have to be different. In a not in a radical shift, but still in a real way. And Rav Kook has on this list Ha'ara b'Torah, that our Torah has to change. The way we learn Torah, the way we think about Torah, our relationship with Torah has to change to a degree now that we're back in Eretz Yisrael as part of the national revival. So again, Rav Kook is not advocating throwing out Talmud Bavli and abandoning Talmud Bavli and just learning Tanakh and just learning Chassidus and just, meditating and doing things of that sort. He's not advocating closing down regular yeshivos and just opening up Batei Sefer LeNevuah. But he is advocating that within our regular learning of Talmud Bavli, other things have to be integrated, other methodologies, other parts of the curriculum, other experiences, to give a new ha'ara with an aleph, a new light on our regular Gemara learning. So, what is the nature of this new ha'ara b'Torah, this chiddush in our limud of Torah that emerges that is when we re-enter Eretz Yisrael? Again, Rav Kook did not think of this as a sharp shift. It is a slow and gradual change. Many of the features that we're going to be discussing, Rav Kook arguably did not really tap into himself in his own learning methodology. If you open up Rav Kook's Tshuvos are highly, highly traditional. There is a book by Rav Nir Yerguttel, Chadashim Gam Yeshanim, where he points out that maybe even subconsciously, Rav Kook quoted maybe more psukim, more agadatas, more general values in his Tshuvos, but it sounds like it's almost subconscious. Rav Kook's Tshuvos read like classic Tshuvos. Rav Kook himself wrote about himself that he did not feel like he had a major innovations in the world of Gemara learning. He was, so to speak, a regular run-of-the-mill gadol, major posek, new shas, basically about that. He would go around the Yeshiva Merkaz Rav, Yeshiva Merkaz Yitro Lameitz. He would talk to people in learning Shaka Vataria of any sugya you're in. But so Rav Kook himself may not have implemented all of his changes, but it's a slow and gradual process that is beginning in his generation and is supposed to continue in its intensity and grow in its intensity as we get closer to Mashiach. But what is the nature of this change? So Begadol, Rav Kook understood Torah's Chutzaretz to be a Torah of Pirud, a Torah of separation, a Torah of disunity, and Torah's Eretz Yisrael is the Torah of Achdus, a Torah of unity, a Torah of connections, a Torah of synthesis. Rav Kook says this in a general sense in many, many, many different pieces, and then he has specific chiburim, specific syntheses or connections that he advocates making as part of Torah's Eretz Yisrael. So first, let's just see a general piece, then we'll get to one chibur. So Rav Kook in Arot HaTorah Yud Gimel Zayin, again, there are other pieces as well. Rav Kook says as follows: Knesset Yisrael bechlala chaya bechutz la'aretz chayim she'enam mekoriyim. Knesset Yisrael, in its general sense, lives in chutz la'aretz in non-original life. Something is not, something is, there's an imitation, and there's an imitation, there's an artificial element for Jewish life in chutz la'aretz. Certainly, that the essence of their life are enveloped in ruchaniyot, in spirituality, in intellectual ideas, in regish, in Torah, in non-physical life, that their experience of these things in Chutz La'aretz is going to be different than their experience of these things in Eretz Yisrael. What ramification does it have on the experience of ruchaniyos and learning Torah and seicha and dea and regesh in Chutz La'aretz? Al kein sham, therefore, there in Chutz La'aretz, Kol nima v'nima yotzeis miguma akas tzochakas tidach averta b'malachu rakande. Every single strand is in almost in contrast or in conflict with other strands. Things are dochek, things that are pushing at each other. But as opposed to that, what happens in Eretz Israel? Harat siburit haaskonos avodah ma'asa. So the living as a community, askanos, doing political things, avoda, work, ma'asa, physical activity. In addition to all these other things, which are going to be part of Torah, they all come together in a harmonious way in Eretz Israel. But so, what parts of Torah does he focus on? Halacha, Agada, Nigla, Nistar, Mechkar, Kabbalah, Musar, Shira, Betikos, Vikovid Rosh, Pilpo, Vigayon, Diktok, Faremes, Shekol, Eila, Hinam, Nichlakim, Rak, Nibakots, Vilomi, Bifnim. All these different parts of Torah and practical life as well. We'll get to the practical life at a later point. But all these different parts of Torah, Halacha, Agada, Nigla, Nistar, Mechkar, Kabbalah, Musar, Shira, Betikos, Kovid Rosh. These are experiences of ways you learn Torah. Pilpo, Higayon, Diktok, and Remez, that these things are all divided on the outside, but not on the inside. Because when the neshama experiences these things naturally, when they come directly down from Shamayim, everything is interconnected. You could feel, you could sense the connections that exist between them. In Chutz La'aretz, these things are distinct. They're distant from each other. That a person involved in one is going to be scared of the other, and there are going to be conflicts between the groups. So Rav Kook says in Chutz La'aretz, Torah, there was an amazing, amazing Torah, but it was differentiated into different disciplines and different methodologies. There were people that are involved in Halakha, people that are involved in Agada. You see this split already in Talmud Bavli. You see, and even Talmud Yishalmi as well, but you see the distinct this in Talmud Bavli. You see this already in Talmud Bavli that there are different, but there are different Bavli Medrash, different people giving shiurim in different topics. There are some people that were bound that were Bavli Agadata, and some certain people that were Bavli Halacha, and they were in. And these two, even though they're both clearly part of Torah, these two disciplines are thought of as distinct and it's somewhat in conflict with each other. Nigla and Nistar as well. You learn Nigla, you don't learn Nistar. You learn Nistar. You have people that were Mukubalim, who weren't necessarily, you know, the biggest names in terms of Gemara and Pesach Halacha. And you had different methodologies of learning. It's Torah Shabbat and Torah Shabbat Peh. Within Torah Shabbat Peh, you have people that are focused on Halacha, people that focus on Lam, people that focus on Lamdas. Then each discipline is viewed as distinct of its own genre, its own methodology. Again, this might be overgeneralizing, but that is the way Rav Kook describes Chutz La'aretz. Torah Shabbat Israel is when you sense through hamuchash neshama, through what is sensed in the neshama, that all of these things are intertwined, they're all interconnected, they all come from the same unity of Torah. Once Am Yisrael is reunited together in Eretz Israel, the Torah as well becomes united. Once Am Yisrael becomes united with Hashem in Eretz Israel, so they could also see through that connection the unity of Torah. And for Rav Kook, this is not something experiential. This is something which should be done or could be done in a Beis Medrash, even in an intellectual way. The different facets of Torah are supposed to be more synthesized, brought closer together than in the past. So that is the Hakdama. For a variety of reasons that are not really connected to the thought of Kook, I thought maybe the first facet to discuss, the first connection to discuss, is actually something Rav Kook writes about. Maybe it's a somewhat unique to Rav Kook, is the connection between traditional Beis Medrash Gemara learning and also academic Gemara learning, academic disciplines. And in order to understand this, I want to understand the chibur Rav Kook was trying to create or bring between regular Beis Medrash Gemara learning, and let's say Tanakh learning as well, and what happens in universities and the different methodologies. We should start with a starting point or a contrast, and that is perhaps the way that the Brisker Derech, the way that the Rabbanei Beis Brisk, whose Torah I am yonik from 1000%, whose Torah is really responsible for me. So this is my Gersa Dan Kusa. And I quote Rav Soloveitchik and the Brisker Rav and Rav Chaim at every possible opportunity, but to start with them as almost a foil to Rav Kook in certain ways. Professor Chaim Seiman has an article called Legal Theology, where he goes through some of the, I guess, underpinnings of the Brisker worldview about halacha. And what he describes is that according to the Brisker worldview, halacha is ahistorical. Halacha is these are legal principles. Hashem came down on our Sinai, and gave Moshe Rabbeinu a certain way of viewing the world. And therefore, this way of viewing the world, halakha, the mitzvos, the different definitions that we have, don't necessarily correlate or aren't supposed to meet human beings where they are. Let's read his article inside, and then we'll see the translation that he has from a speech Rav Soloveitchik gave. The Brisker constructs his legal world to emphasize that halakha stands outside of time and space. Using the Chakira, the analyst transformed halakha from hundreds of technical details into abstract legal principles. Halakha reasoning comes to emphasize the law's timelessness, coherence, and consistency. Each Brisker move is designed to reinforce the image of an ideal and divinely given law, which, like the divine itself, remains pure, abstract, and meta-historical. Halakhos are not dependent on things in this world. They are not dependent on history or culture. If you the let me just give one example. Let's say bishul. The law is a bishul. So you would think, what is the definition of bishul on Shabbos? It's cooking. It's cooking is something that we understand when we're in the kitchen. There's something called cooking, but in the halakhic terminology, there is a halakhic definition of bishul which came down from Shemayim, which sometimes correlates with what we do in our kitchens, and sometimes does not. You know, kli sheni ina mavashel is the halakhic principle, which may or may not actually correlate with the real mitzvos. And we want to remove any real mitzvos, any social history, any cultural history, any human assumptions from the world of halakha. Maybe not in terms of psak halakha, but at least in terms of the lamdos. And of Soloveitchik, in his hesped for the Brisker Rav, in Mandodek Midod, he has a beautiful, beautiful exposition of this, which Chaim Seyman very, very nicely translated. Rav Chaim fought a war of independence on behalf of halakhic reasoning, granted it full autonomy. Any psychologization or socialization of halakha strangles its soul, as such an attempt destroys mathematical thinking. If halakhic thinking depends on personal variables, it loses its objectivity and devolves into subjectivity lacking all substance. Rather, Rav Chaim provided for halakha specific methodological tools, created a complex set of halakha categories, and an order of a priori premises through a process of pure postulation. Halakha is not conceived of in historical, political, sociological terms. And halakha is not there that there were certain, there were the Jewish people, they were avadim, they were almost barbarians, ancient Near East, and God came down and said, here, follow this, you'll become better people. That's not what happened. Halakha wasn't there to meet Am Yisrael and to help them develop and to become better spiritual or moral people. Halakha is God's way of viewing the world. It transcends time and space. And therefore, it is really, in its original sense, has very little to do with human beings. Same way that gravity has very little to do with human beings. It is something that God put into the world. Mitzvahs as well precede human beings, precede human society. They are spiritual laws that God put into this world. And that impacts the way you view halakha. Let me give you an example. If you know, a malva and a lova come into court, and the malva is holding a shtar that says the lova owes him money, and the lova says, no, I already paid, so the Gemara in Bava Basra says that we believe the malva because he's holding a shtar. Why? Because the malva has a taina, shtar chabiyach my body, that if you would have paid back the chov, why would I still be holding on to the shtar? You should have demanded it back. So that seems like an umdana. It sounds like a strong rove. It sounds like a psychological principle. If the lova really paid, he would have demanded for the shtar back, he would have had the shtar ripped up. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik says no. He has the various questions on this. He says it can't just be an umdana, it can't be a rov. Ein halcha b'malach harov, and some other questions he has. Rather, one is a taina of shtar chabiyach my body. It is a halachic principle. It's nothing to do with human psychology. Rather, it has to do with the nature of idos shebishtar and tfitas b'al shtar. That if the way halacha works, that if somebody holds onto a shtar, and the two edim signed on the shtar, and the b'al shtar, the person that has rights over the shtar, is holding onto it, the shtar is made, kamea edim, that what it says in the shtar is true. So we're taking a principle in the Gemara that sounds like it is based on a psychological umdana, shtar chabiyancha my body, that has to do with the malva-lova relationship, that the lova would have, if he would have paid it back, he would have taken the shtar and ripped it up, and we're saying, no, it doesn't have to do with psychology. It doesn't have to do with an umdana of how human beings should or would have behaved. It has to do with this legal principle of the way shtar works and tfisas bala shtar, The nature of Edo's Vashtar. You know, in the Brisker Haggadah, the quote from Rav Chaim, that Matazu Ashroma, we're not actually asking for a reason for mitzvos, because he says over there, Rav Soloveitchik, you know, referenced, quoted this idea many, many times, that the mitzvos, halachos, are like the rules of science. You can't ask why does gravity exist. This is just the way it is. And As opposed to the rules of science, the mitzvos are the lens through which God created the world. It's talk about reis of our own. So you can't say, oh, Hashem gave us a mitzvah of murder because murder is bad. Hashem gave us a mitzvah of tzedakah because tzedakah helps people out. It's pum fakir. The causality is in the opposite direction. There is a mitzvah of tzedakah. There is a mitzvah of ritzicha. And because of God's construct, before human beings were ever created, because of this independent truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that ritzicha is aser and tzedakah is mitzvah, devolves from that, you know, the notion that tzedakah is going to help people and ritzicha is going to hurt people. And why, you know, I think the Beis HaLevi says, why do we have parents? Because there's a mitzvah of kibbutz avayim. Why did the siyasa try and take place? Because there's a mitzvah of eating matzah. So the mitzvos are, they're not, you don't think of them in terms of their utilitarian, their social, their educational value. They have those values as well. They help us become better people. But it's not, they're primarily not about that. These are mitzvos, gzeiros, am Hashem, in a more profound way, but similar to the rules of science. Rav Kook is a mekubal. He understands and he believes that the mitzvos exist in some supernal sense, im shemayim, over and above, you know, human categories. But at the same time, Rav Kook definitely did feel that Hashem, the mitzvot, should be thought of as an educational system for specific people in specific time periods. Rav Soloveitchik writes in some places, and I've heard this from some of his Talmidim. This is why Rav Soloveitchik was against part of the discipline of academic Talmud. What does it mean to study Talmud academically? It means you try to understand as much as possible about the time period in which a specific Tana lived, what was happening politically, socially, culturally during that time period, who was in charge, the Romans, the Persians, the Greeks, the Chuli v'Chuli, what were the challenges of this particular person, who was his Rebbe, who were his Talmidim, who were the people he hung out with, what did he eat for breakfast, and within that context, you try to figure out what the meaning of what they said. Soloveitchik says, no, the Torah is not about that. Torah is ahistorical. The truths of the Torah, the truths of Halakha, are always going to be true, no matter, they're above history, they're above this specific person. If it's said in a Torah book, if it's said in the Psukim or in Gemara or in the Mishnah, it is objectively true. It is not connected at all with the particular historical circumstance of that person. Maybe it was said, this statement was said by this person because of the circumstance. The circumstance definitely didn't cause the statement to be true or influence the statement in any which way. But Rav Kook definitely took a slightly different approach, and he understood Torah to be, in addition to everything else that it is, to be a practical guide for human beings, and therefore understanding the context in which the Torah was given or created or said is going to be a very important tool to understanding the development of Torah over time and how Torah interacts with the world to create a Torah Chaim, to create a Torah that is living and breathing and impactful on human society and individual human beings. Just to start, let's start with Eder HaYakar. Eder HaYakar is Rav Kook's hesped or treatise about his father-in-law, the Adarit. It's a wide-ranging. He deals with lots of different things over there. And one of the things he talks about is Assyriology, which was, I guess, a slightly new field when Rav Kook was writing this, you used to read Chumash, and you thought Chumash was totally unique. Parshas Shvatim was totally unique. There's nothing like it in the world. It's very, very easy to understand that it's divine. It's totally unique. And then archaeologists and historians started uncovering this. There's a whole field of Assyriology. There's Hittite codes. There's a code of Hammurabi. And all of a sudden, Torah is being contextualized within a certain context, and then makes people very hesitant. It hurts people's emunah in the divinity of the Torah. So Rav Kook writes as follows. You look at the underlying part. Uve'inyon dimlei ha-ma'asim. Hakolo kvar mimlosa Rambam. Lefana b'divri chazam. Lefursam adavar shenevuah misnahages im tivo shel adam. Nevuah works together with people's nature, with where people are at a specific point. Kitivo nitiyaso yitzrika lizalos api hadrakas alkes. Because what is the purpose of nevuah, the purpose of the Torah? It's to elevate people based on Hashem's guidance. Shalom in the Torah, el tzarif menes abrios. Torah is not a set of abstract, kilos of spiritual scientific principles. It might be that as well, but it's also there to guide real live human beings and interact with their lives where they're at the current moment. Alkein, kol adzavarim shemitzana chinuch, shekodem latan Torah, matzu makam bu'uma devolam, mrak hayalam yisod musari, vaya afshar la'alosam l'madam musarit nitzchis u'mispatachas, yishirisam atzar alukis. So therefore, the Torah is meeting the Jewish people where they are. They are B'nai Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They have Mesorah. They know they're the chosen people. But the Maisa, they were just slaves in Mitzrayim for a long period of time. They're living in an ancient Near East context. And therefore, the text of the Torah is going to meet them where they are and develop whatever base level of Mussar they have in order to take them where they are and develop it further, slowly but surely, so that they could live up to their potential of being the Am HaNivchar. So, and therefore, certain parts of the Torah might have been written in a certain way to help elevate those original Jews that were there. And of course, and therefore it's not and therefore it should be taken it should be natural that the Torah is going to be written in the context of an ancient Near East book, or at least borrow certain phrases or borrow certain assumptions. But that's where the people are at. But the Torah is there to elevate them from that level, so it has to meet them where they are. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very smart, and Hashem was able to put infinite meanings in the Torah, and Torah is relevant for us as well. But in the original sense of Assyriology, the fact that there are parallels between the Torah and the ancient Near East books shouldn't come as a surprise. It should be natural, because you have to know the genre of the Torah. The genre of the Torah is not to teach us abstract principles of truth. The purpose of the Torah is to elevate real live human beings. Foucault writes the same thing in his letter about the history of the, about the about the age of the universe. Then maybe even the universe really is billions of years old. Why would the Torah not emphasize that? Why would it make it sound like it's six days old? There's no contradiction. There would be billions of years old in Chumash, but it doesn't sound like it at first glance. Cook says, yeah, it's because you have to know your genre. The Torah is not there to teach us facts. It's not there to teach us spiritual facts. It's not there to teach us scientific facts. It is there to elevate us physically, you know, spiritually, and morally, so that we could live up to our full potential as living in Hashem's image and Hashem's vision in this world. And therefore, Hashem decided that the best way to capture those messages, capture those values, is by describing creation in terms of 6 days. Even though that might be misleading scientifically, it doesn't matter, because you have to know the genre in which you're writing. And Rav Kook therefore looked at the world of academic Talmud, where people were looking at the history of the time period and who trying to figure out Rabbi Kiva lived in a certain context, and Rabbi Gamliel lived in a certain context, and Rava and Abaye lived in a certain context, and they're trying to figure out what the meaning of their statements were within that historical context. And of course, like the people that are doing it, they are current people. Most of them are not from at all. They are trying to do this to undermine the authority of Torah, to say, oh, Rabbi Kiva only said this because he had certain assumptions, because he was basically a Roman. Abaye and Rava were basically Persians, and therefore they said X, Y, and Z. Rav Kook is saying that the same way Rav Kook looked at everything else, that there's a certain movement which could have negative ramifications, but at its core could be a positive thing. Rav Kook said, let's look at academic Talmud study in a similar way. That by using these tools of understanding the culture and the context and the development of Torah from Rebbe to Talmud, from generation to generation, we could really understand the Yad Hashem through history, how what the Torah meant to Abaye, what the Torah meant to Rava, so it might have been different than what specific lines in the Torah meant to Rabbi Akiva and Rami Gamliel, because they were living in different contexts, living in different time periods, they were facing different challenges, and then we could trace the Yad Hashem throughout history and understanding what the Torah did for different generations in different ways. And that will be an amazing understanding of the Gilui of Yad Hashem throughout history, not just the history of Am Yisrael, when that Am Yisrael goes from Golos to Golos and eventually comes back to Eretz Yisrael, but also in terms of the Gilui of Torah throughout history. We could trace what type of Torah was being revealed for specific people in their generation, and that will give us a more textured, a better understanding of what the Torah was able to do for those people. Just to have a couple makaros, of course, this is not a major theme in Rav Kook's thought, and this is not necessarily the first thing that is naturally spoken about when people talk about Torah Eretz Yisrael. But there are other chiburim. The Rav Kook wanted to do wanted to engender, which I guess are more natural. But just this is something Rav Kook wrote about a decent amount. Just two letters Rav Kook writes about this, about Gemara in particular. This is a letter to Rav Reines about I think it's about the new yeshiva he wanted to start, Yeshiva HaMerkazit HaOlamit. Rav Kook writes, Alkain, that one of our goals is to have some mitsuyanim in our yeshiva, b'yoser liyunim ruchaniim, look into more spiritual matters. Liyaseid al darak hakadosha, amitas chokmas Yisrael l'chol si'ifah, to be able to establish al darak hakadosha, the truth of chokmas Yisrael in all of its varieties. What does that mean? B'chol kavasa, ad shelo yu on chokmas ha'historia ma'bikoret, higyon va'deos ha'piyot ha'chon fayim, Such that these fields of Chokhmas Yisrael, and such that the fields of history, Bikoros, criticism, Higyon and Deah and Piyot are not only going to be in the realm of people that are actually trying to destroy the Torah and undermine Emunah. What does Rav Kook say? Rav Kook is saying that what is historian Bikoros? What do these words have to do with Chokhmas Yisrael and the learning of Gemara in his new yeshiva? He said he wants to take Mitzuyanim, and he wants to, Chokhmas Yisrael is the Hebrew term for Wissenschaft. This was the academic Talmud study. And Chokhmas Historia by Bikoret, this is understanding history and Bikoret and criticism, critical learning. You're comparing sources. You're seeing what's in the Mishnah, what's in the Sefta, what's in the Bible, what's in the Yerushalmi, what's in Roman law, what do the Greeks say about this? And you're comparing and contrasting. And then you could understand, and then you could put it all together. And that is, Rav Kook says you will have to do this Adar HaKadosha, and only Mitzuyanim are going to be able to do this. This is something that takes a lot of training and a lot of care. It was certainly part of the original curriculum of Yeshivat Merkaz HaRav. It was not necessarily implemented as many of the great shames of the yeshiva were, but certainly part of the curriculum. A second letter. Rav Kook writes also about, I think it's about the new yeshiva, I'm forgetting exactly what it's about. Rav Kook says, this is a good derech halimud. B'chlal derech avod etzarech lios. L'hashvos al kol inyan azabav lidu mas yerushalmi. L'chipas v'chol mokori yem eshayakim lo. Nekadmonim, targumim, mesoros, teshuvos, agonim, divri akwanim, b'alakha, poskim, and mabakrim. So you should go through all of the history of a halakha, systematically, from the earlier sources down to the later sources. L'achkor gam al avod al-chitzono, kishal nakarim, akarayim. Look at what non-Jews are saying about the topic. Look at the Karayim. To see where they went off. To do everything carefully with a lot of Yishavadas. Here comes the main paragraph for us. When Hashem is marked by our Gvul, and we have the time and the space and the resources. So we will be able to study law. In all and culture, in all sorts of different, all sorts of, sorry, law and all sorts of different cultures. The Haravs, to show, Ad kama gavla hashpas hakodesh alachol aloso. Mischaber bazeh im chachmi leib yozei Hashem ha-mevinim sifrios amim shonim. We will have to consult with chachmi leib yozei Hashem, who understand books of other nations. And we are going to study Roman law from other nations, I guess Roman law and American law and everything of that sort, to show the hashpa of the kodesh on the whole. What is Rav Kook describing here? He's describing learning Gemara, but understanding what did the Romans and the Persians and the Greeks and all these other cultures say about this topic during this time period. And Rav Kook is saying you could better understand what the value of Torah is in that time period when you do it comparatively. When you do it to see what did the Romans say, what did the Greeks say, what did the Persians say? Oh, what did the Tana say? What did the Amora say? And then you could see the Hashpa of the Kodesh. You can see in the Torah ideas are pushing certain values of Hashem forward in ways that the Mishpat HaRumi, which Rav Kook explicitly references, I think in an English description of what he wanted to do in Yeshiva Merkaz HaRav, for at least for some people, not everybody, but for some people, to study the Mishnah together in comparison to Mishpat HaRumi, in comparison to Roman law, that you're able to see what the hashpa of these Torah ideas are. So in these, there are better makoros, right? I guess I should have brought them. Rav Kook explicitly says this helps you see the Yad Hashem of the development of Torah throughout history. It helps you see what the hashpa of Kodesh and Chol is. Helps you see what the Torah mean to real life people in this time period. So again, Rav Kook is not advocating not studying Bresh Kerlontos. No, Rav Kook is not advocating abandoning Hakiras. But there is a certain sense over here that the Torah is best understood in addition to the Chakiras and the Lamdos and everything and the abstract thought and things of that sort. It's also could be understood on a level. What did it mean to Abaye in his own context? What did it mean to Abaye's Talmidim, to Abaye's Balabatim, to Abaye's Shulrav? What's Abaye's Shulrav? What did it mean to the people of Nechoza when Rava was teaching them certain halachos? In order to understand what it meant to them, you have to understand what context were they living in, what was their life like, what were their challenges, what came easy for them. And therefore, you could better understand what the Torah meant for real people. So this is one chibur Rav Kook was advocating for as Jews returned to Eretz Israel. he wanted to have a chibur. Again, the dominant, prominent learning is regular traditional Gemara halacha, but for certain people, certain mitzvahim, certain people had an idea for it, he wanted them to also be doing these other things. And Rav Kook was very much makshiv, a Talmud of his, I think Rav Levin, the author of Otzar Gaonim, gave him a lot of chizuk and encouragement, responded to a lot of his letters. Rav Kook had a daily chavrusa with Shaul Lieberman when Shaul Lieberman was studying, I think at Hebrew U. Of Ari Shavat has a series of very, very good articles, very fantastic articles, where he goes through the relationship between Rav Kook and Shaul Lieberman and some of these topics, Rav Kook's vision for how to integrate certain academic methodologies into regular Gemara learning, and also how Rav Kook didn't practically do it for a whole variety of reasons. But Rav Kook was advocating for this on a certain theoretical level. Just to give one, just even Mamkish, let's just give one more example. Machon Zemar Taaretz, we're learning Hilchos Tefillah. So there's a machlokas in terms of Shmoneh Esrei. You know, the Rav Gamliel says 18 brachos every day. Rav Yeshua says Me'ein Yuches, which Shmuel says is Havininu. Rav Akiva says if it's Shigur B'Fiv, you say Yuches. If not Shigur, it's not Shigur B'Fiv. Then you could say Me'ein Yuches. So there's a machlokas. I know. And are you always obligated to say 18 brachos every day, or do you have a way out? Or could you say Havininu? Can you say it's Tefillah Katzar, or things of that sort? So this could be analyzed totally ahistorically. It doesn't matter that they're going to be able to live in a certain century. Yeshua live in a certain century. This is a machlokas. This is a machlokas. What was the takanas chasal? What was the takana of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah when they were mataki in Shmoneh Esrei, let's say. But if you again, if you start thinking about things sort of a little bit historically, so then you begin to realize this is what all the Chokrim point out, that Rabbi Gamliel was living in the door of Yavne, the generation of and immediately following the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And then the Jewish world was going through a seismic shift. People needed a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Beis HaMikdash was no longer there. And a lot of things Rabbi Gamliel was doing was trying to concretize, formalize, centralize halakha so that all Jews everywhere would be doing the same thing once you don't have the Beis HaMikdash as a centrifugal force anymore to keeping everybody together. And so people are going to have to, so you need halakha to be much more concretized and much more of a unifying force. And maybe this shita of Rabbi Gamliel, that you have to say Yud Kas Brachos every day, that all Jews should say Yud Kas Brachos every day. According to Rabbi Yonah, before this, not everybody was saying a full Shemoneh Esrei. People said, people only said the Brachos at Tzrichos Lehem. That's what Rabbi Yonah writes in Brachos. And I'm forgetting already. And Rabbi Yonah says, no, all Jews always have to say all the same Brachos, because again, this is not explicit in Talmud Bavli. You could see how that could be an amazing unifying force for all of Am Yisrael, and getting people to daven a lot more, and now that the Beis HaMikdash is not around, is something that is super important. And the other Tanayim, maybe are saying no, that maybe this is too much. Maybe Rabbi Lazar says, if you make your tefillah keva, you're supposed to tachanunim. The Talmud Yerushalmi says you're supposed to have a tefillah chadasha b'chol yom. Again, the Bible has different interpretations of Rabbi Lazar, but at least the Talmud Yerushalmi says according to Rabbi Lazar, he would daven a tefillah chadasha b'chol yom. Maybe he was against this. Maybe he said this is too radical. We have to go back to the ways we're doing it in Bayit Sheni. Continue the ways we're doing it in Bayit Sheni. That everybody should daven their own tefillah. Things are much more amorphous. So you could see that this machlokas, which in Lomdos is super important in terms of what was the nature of takanas chazal that you're supposed to have a Shmoneh Esrei. It is the chiyuv derabanan to daven three times a day or twice a day. It could be understood just as an abstract machlokas, but once you get yourself into the historical time period, it also is a very it also makes it can make, it can be, it can make it more meaningful and you could broaden the conversation. In terms of what did it mean for Rabbi Gamliel and his Talmidim and people during that time period to have a unifying force of tefillah, and what was lost by doing that, a certain amount of spontaneity, a certain amount of kavanah, but what was gained by doing that, the uniformity of Am Yisrael, everybody doing the same thing, going around the world, wherever you are, you're dominating the same, Shemot Esrei, basically, and it's such a powerful unifying force, and especially without the Beis HaMikdash there, it gives a lot more texture to maybe the real life nature of that machlokas. Of course, there are dangers involved. Once you do that, it's a lot of speculative. This is not explicit in our sources. It's not explicit in the Mishnah Tosefta Talmud Bavli Talmud Yerushalmi that this was the nature of the machlokas, or this was the backdrop, or this even that this was the backdrop of the machlokas. And also, it's dangerous, as Rav Soloveitchik points out, because if you start doing this a lot, so maybe you'll think halacha is very malleable. Oh, they said this halacha while they were living in this time period of X, Y, and Z. Rav Kook has to deal with those issues. He does deal with them. God willing, we'll discuss that in a future session. This is one type of chibur that Rav Kook has in terms of Torah Eretz Yisrael. Yirtzeh Hashem, next week, we'll discuss a different chibur. There's so many chiburim. Torah Shemuksav and Torah Shebaal Peh. Nigla and Nistar. Abstract Lamdas and Lachal HaMesa. The Torah, the Beis Medrash, and real practical life. All of these things that are chiburim that Rav Kook wanted to emphasize and bring out and strengthen during because of the time period as part of Torah's Eretz Israel. Again, he's not claiming that these things were never that is a huge kedush, these things were never connected before in the past. He is bringing a new Torah into the world. Everybody always understood there were connections between Torah Shabbat and Torah Shabbat and Nigla and Esther. But bringing that to the fore, learning with those things in mind, learning with those things consciously, and trying to show and experience the connections between them, that is something Rav Kook was advocating for as part of Torah's Eretz Yisrael. And today we did a Hakdama, and we did a little bit about the chibur between regular Beis Medrash learning, at least the way I was taught. The regular Beis Medrash learning that I was yonik from my Rebbe in Yeshiva University, the Bris Kar Derech, and the type of learning that happens or happens in universities. Rav Kook was very scared of, was aware of the dangers of, but wanted to bring certain aspects of it into the Beis Medrash in order to help give more meaning and more texture and more of a chibur between Torah and Am Yisrael, to be able to better understand the Ad Hashem of development of Torah throughout history. Thank you so much. I hope you have a great day.